Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. Coming up later on Smart Talk, a program for low-income high school seniors and first-generation college students that focuses on the historic struggle for freedom in America. But up front, the number of new positive coronavirus cases in Pennsylvania is slowing down, but so are the number of Pennsylvanians getting vaccinated against the virus. The State Department of Health reported 1,700 new cases yesterday and say 5.5 million people have gotten their first vaccine shot and 4.2 million are totally vaccinated. The number of vaccinations may pick up with approval of the Pfizer vaccine for children ages 12 through 15. But have we finally turned the corner in the pandemic? Will we ever reach herd immunity? And do we need to? Will kids go back to school in person next fall? Are masks a thing of the past? Our guests today can address those and other questions. Joining us is Pennsylvania's Acting Physician General, Dr. Denise Johnson. Dr. Johnson, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Dr. Johnson, you've been the state's physician general for a few months now, coming a year into a pandemic. What is your role at this time during the pandemic as the state's physician general?
Well, thank you. I've started at the end of March, so it's been a little bit more than a month, but this has been quite a time for us, and I think as a country as well as a state. A lot of our efforts have been focused on vaccination. It's been trying to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as we can so that we can turn the tide on this pandemic. I know everyone's been worn out after this past year, and we're really looking forward to brighter days ahead.
As I pointed out, it has been over a year now for the pandemic. Positive cases are down, although we've seen that before, only to get another surge. Vaccinations seem to be going well. But when you're talking about the focus on vaccinations, is that the big challenge now, the biggest challenge that you and the state that you're facing right now?
I believe so. As you mentioned, we've done a lot of vaccinations, and I believe that the vaccinations are making an impact. As you said, our cases are decreasing, and I expect that that will be more lasting because we have so many more people that are vaccinated. We focused on vaccinating people quickly, but we also are focused now on making sure that we get to those hard to reach areas where people might not have as much access to, again, continue this vaccination, getting as many Pennsylvanians vaccinated as possible. But I think the number of people that we have vaccinated has made a difference in the cases that we're seeing. And so we will hope that this trend will continue of decreasing cases.
You know, when we talk about people who aren't vaccinated right now, much of the attention has been on Pennsylvanians who are hesitant to get the vaccine for whatever reason. Is that the group that you need to reach now? Or you mentioned access. I mean, it would seem that in the last couple months that there have been so many places that have opened up that have offered vaccinations that access wouldn't seem to be as big of an issue. So for those who haven't been vaccinated right now, what's the biggest hurdle?
Well, becoming vaccinated is a personal decision, and the reasons for not being vaccinated now are very many. So as you mentioned, access, that is certainly one of them. Some people do not feel the urgency to get vaccinated, and they would if vaccinations were easy and convenient. So that's one thing. The other, some people need more information. So some people need more information about the safety of vaccines. Some people need to know that their friends or colleagues have had the vaccine. Some people need to know that the vaccines are really working and preventing disease and causing our cases to go down. So we've been working on all these fronts, providing the information that people need to make a decision, but also making vaccines a lot more convenient so there's not so much effort needed to schedule a vaccine and go someplace far away to be able to get vaccinated.
Are you saying they're not convenient for some people now? Because, again, there have been so many places that are offering vaccinations throughout the state, and now we're at a point that there's walk-ins that people are not even scheduling appointments ahead of time. Are you saying that access is still an issue with some people?
It's still an issue. It's getting better and better every day. We initially had large vaccination sites that people went to get vaccinated. And as you said, we are reaching out now so that they could get it in independent pharmacies, sometimes in their physician office. We've also done at different locations as well for vaccines. And we're still vaccinating quite a few people. I think yesterday we had more than 91,000 people vaccinated. But some people have difficulty getting off of work or the time of day they need to be vaccinated. Especially in rural areas, it may not be easy with transportation to get to a vaccination site. So even though we're expanding those points of access, we still need to do more, especially in some areas where the vaccination rates are lower.
What are some of those places? I mean, you don't have to be specific with the places, but when we talk about them, how would you describe some of the places where vaccinations are lower?
Well, they're definitely varied. So they may be in the inner city. So some people in the inner city don't have the transportation, or they work a job where it's hard to get off work, and so they're not able to get that vaccination during their work day. It may be in rural areas where transportation is difficult, and so they're not able to travel the distance that's needed to get the vaccination. So those areas are varied, but we are continuously looking at that and looking for ways to outreach to increase vaccination rates in those areas.
But Dr. Johnson, one of the areas that has gotten the most attention is not necessarily those who lack access. I mean, especially early on when vaccinations were being delivered, that was a huge issue. But right now, from what we hear, is that there are a large group of people who are hesitant because of either political reasons, they don't trust that it's been tested enough, they worry about the side effects, and African Americans, even though I think from what I understand, there have been a higher percentage of African Americans that have gotten vaccinated than what many expected, there still is a hesitancy because of history amongst African Americans. You talked about educating. It seems as though some of the people that I just listed and polls have said that we're just not going to get it.
Well, certainly. As I said, vaccination is an individual choice, and many people have reasons that they are reluctant to be vaccinated. You mentioned African Americans. There's been certainly a history of unethical treatment in terms of medical care and experiments. And so certainly those sort of issues resonate with some people. I think that also, this vaccination has been somewhat politicized, and some people are not sure that they have credible information. But I think that more information is being delivered to people so that they can have the credible information. And I think that that is changing some minds as well. And then I think when people realize that their physicians who they really trust recommend the vaccines, and in fact, a large majority of physicians, more than 90%, have been vaccinated themselves. Their families have been vaccinated and they are recommending it. I think it gives more people confidence than, again, knowing that their trusted medical professional has actually gotten the vaccine themselves.
We've been told throughout the last 6 months or so since the vaccines were given temporarily a temporary approval or emergency approval, I should say, that reaching herd immunity is the way that we will defeat COVID-19. And often we would hear a percentage of 70% of people needing to be vaccinated. Now, we may get to that point here in Pennsylvania. I mean, we're over 50% now, but is herd immunity still the goal, and does it need to be to defeat COVID?
So what herd immunity really means is that enough people are immune from the disease so that there is very little of the virus circulating, so that the people within the community who are unvaccinated are unlikely to get the disease because there's so little circulating. So there have been many numbers proposed, and I think that it's sort of an estimation about how much we need. But effectively, what we need is to be able to see the cases are decreasing and there are few cases because so many people are immune. So that's what we're reaching for. So it's hard to say a number that will get us there. But what we have seen as we've had more people vaccinated is we've seen our case rates come down, and we've been coming down pretty dramatically. And so we're seeing less of the virus spread, which is great news, because many of us are concerned that as the virus continues to circulate, there's more chance to mutate. And so we have emergence of variants that may not be as receptive to the treatments as well as the vaccine that we have. So we've been in this race then to get more people vaccinated. I think we're seeing the results of that now with the decreasing cases. Deaths are still lagging a little bit. First, you see a decrease in cases and decrease in hospitalizations, and you see decrease in deaths. But we're headed in the right direction. So I think we're getting there in terms of effective herd immunity. Now, as you mentioned, we have about 50% of people who are fully vaccinated in Pennsylvania and 55% who have had the first dose. As the governor has stated, we are aiming for 70% of adults who are fully vaccinated. But it's important to know that if you look at adults ages 18 and above, we have 67% who have gotten their first dose. So we're almost there. Within 3 to 4 weeks then, for them to get the second dose of the Pfizer or Moderna, we would be about that 67% there if we had no more vaccinations. So it's not a large margin that we need to get to that 70%. And I think as Pennsylvanians, we can get there.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today is Pennsylvania's Acting Physician General, Dr. Denise Johnson. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Dr. Johnson, we have an email here from a kid, a listener. Says, could the reluctant to get vaccinated or reluctance to get vaccinated be because the topic has been overly discussed? Are people just tuning out because the same messages have become just background noise? I mean, the point he brings up, is that a danger?
Well, I know that all of us, again, we're tired of the pandemic. We're tired of all of the sacrifices that we've had to make to try to control this spread of the disease. So sure, some people might be tired of hearing the message, but I think we're close in terms of getting more people vaccinated. So we can't really let up right now. We need to make sure that our friends and family members who are not yet vaccinated do have the opportunity. They can get our slogan for PA Unites Against COVID is, we have the power to stop this disease, and we really do. We've got great tools in the vaccine to do it. And so we really need to give it our full effort.
Along those lines, I mentioned in the introduction that, we have seen cases go down before over the past year, only for a surge to return. Is it different now? Are you confident that there won't be another surge?
Well, I wish I could predict with that level of certainty, but it's different now because we have so much more vaccines, and we really know from studies in healthcare workers and others that people are who are vaccinated have a much, much decreased risk of cases. Yes, there are a few breakthrough cases, but that is a very, very small percentage. So seeing that people who are vaccinated is making our case rate go down, I'm confident that that's going to continue unless we just stop vaccinating and allow the variants to really expand.
Let's take a phone call from Ron in Enola. Ron, you're on Smart Talk.
Yes, Scott. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, you're welcome.
My question is kind of two-part. What about using the National Guard, especially in the early days? Maybe it would have helped to really get that access to the vaccine that many people couldn't get to. The National Guard is really good at mobilizing and doing large public crowd events. And second part, for the people who can't get out of work, what about like the Bloodmobile comes around to lots of places? Why couldn't those people be, as healthcare workers, equipped to give the shot? And I'll take my answer off air. Thanks.
All right, Ron. Thank you very much for your call. Dr. Johnson, the National Guard is being used now. It's only been within the past month or so that has been happening. What about those mobile units, though?
So, Ron, thank you very much for that. And I think you're right in terms of the National Guard. They are outstanding at logistics, and they have been running mobile clinics and also supporting other clinics. So the National Guard has really helped. I think early on, though, we had a problem with not having much vaccine instead of not having enough providers. We had a lot of providers willing to give vaccine, but the amount of vaccine that we had was very limited. But the National Guard has been in full force, and they have been doing an outstanding job. In terms of mobile clinics, we are doing that. The National Guard is supporting that. I know that Latino Connection, I visited one of their mobile clinics where they've had the bilingual providers out there. And then we also are looking to do some mobile clinics in rural areas. Some of that is supported by National Guard. Some of that is supported by Pima. But that is something that we are doing as well. We have done some vaccinations at work sites. And so, as I talked about expanding, we're looking at any possibility to get vaccine very, very convenient to people so you don't even have to make much of an effort. Just be there when you are ready to have that vaccine.
Dr. Johnson, the CDC announced last week, and the state followed, that if a person is fully vaccinated, they can go without a mask. But it was pointed out that many of those not vaccinated have not been wearing masks anyway. And some people look at that and say that's a recipe for spread. So what is the state, what are you recommending with the use of mask?
So we always mirror the CDC guidance. So we are following the CDC guidance. Although businesses and workplaces are free to make more restrictive guidances based on their population and what their business needs are. We do have a masking order that still is in effect, and that will continue to be in effect. Again, the governor has said for 70% of Pennsylvanians to be fully vaccinated to lift that. As a community, we depend on each other, right? And so that our actions don't affect just us, they affect each other. And so I know that there is concern that people will not be honest and walk around without a mask, but we're appealing to our community spirit to do what we need to get past this pandemic. All of us want to go back out to dinner, hang out with friends, have kids have sleepovers. We want to get back to doing those things again. And we have seen that the vaccines really help us get there. And so we really are working on getting as many people vaccinated as we can.
I hate to sound like I'm being argumentative with you, but, that has been the message all along, is that, do this for others, not just for yourself, that, you're protecting others when you're wearing a mask, other than, and protecting yourself. But for a segment of the population, that message hasn't gotten through. So what would make it get through now?
Well, I'm sure that there are some that message will never get through to, right? And there's nothing that we can do that will resonate with absolutely everyone. But we know that Pennsylvanians have done a great job. I think I saw a recent study that says Pennsylvania has, I think was number 5 in terms of the response to COVID and the results from that. So 67%+ who've already had their first shot decreasing cases means that Pennsylvanians are doing something right. And so that the large majority of Pennsylvanians are doing what needs to be done to get us out of this pandemic. And so Pennsylvanians are doing a great job. We just are not quite at the finish line. We need to keep going, but there are going to be a few that are not willing to, make those changes. But I think everyone cares about their loved ones. No one wants to spread COVID to someone and make someone else sick. And so I believe that most Pennsylvanians feel that way. And I believe we see the results because of how well we're doing.
I want to read a couple emails we've received. One says, I'm a COVID and special pathogens critical care nurse at a large area hospital. Recently, I have had patients who are fully vaccinated but still tested positive on preoperative workups. Please understand that while these patients are not symptomatic COVID, they are still positive and may still infect someone else. And this nurse says, wear your mask. Diseases are not political. And I also have one here from someone who did not vote because of the poll workers not wearing masks. Just said, my wife was not fully vaccinated, waiting for 2 weeks after second shot of Pfizer, did not vote yesterday because the poll workers were not wearing masks. In particular, the person that I had to hand my ballot to have it scanned did not have a mask. I talked to that person in charge, and he said they did not have to if they were vaccinated, how are we to know? Talked to the Lancaster Board of Elections. They said that the poll workers, that they did not have to wear a mask. I have to admit also that when I voted yesterday, none of the poll workers were wearing masks. Now, they were behind plexiglass. The point being with both of these emails is that, there are a lot of Pennsylvanians that over the past year have gotten used to wearing masks and are somewhat nervous about the order now that, oh, by the way, you can take off your mask if you've been vaccinated. It has created some confusion here in the past week. What does the state say about wearing masks?
Well, again, following CDC guidance that if you're fully vaccinated, that you don't have to in many situations, but also that people can wear masks, and especially if it makes you more comfortable. So we're following the guidance, realizing that there can be some flexibility. And again, acknowledging that some businesses and some workplaces may continue to have their employees and the customers masked for many reasons. There may be people who are not able to be vaccinated and have immune condition that makes them more vulnerable. There can be very many reasons. This has been a change for us. This pandemic has, we've had all kinds of changes. And so we went from a nation that did not ever wear masks to one that is wearing masks all the time now. It's going to be a change. It's going to be different. We've had to adjust to lots of different changes, but we will adjust.
Had a question here from John, wanted to know, is it true that anyone who is dying now from COVID was not vaccinated. In other words, you know, we've been told that, yes, it is true that you can contract the virus. It happens rarely after you've been fully vaccinated, but even if you do, you won't get as sick and you won't die. So John's question is, those who are dying, we hear those daily death counts, which I'm sure a lot of people don't really care for. But when we hear about the number of people who have died from COVID, have those people been vaccinated?
So a recent study that I've seen said about 99% or so of people who are sick and dying with COVID have not been vaccinated. Certainly there have been some people who have been vaccinated and have died with COVID. I don't know those cases specifically, whether or not they had an underlying condition, but those cases are extremely uncommon. So yes, it is possible to die if you've been vaccinated. Remember, no vaccine is 100%, right? It does decrease COVID and it does decrease deaths, but not at 100%. But that risk is extremely small, but I can't say that it's zero.
One of the big questions many Pennsylvanians have, Dr. Johnson, is will students be able to go back to school in person this fall? And if they do, will it be with mask or without mask?
Well, I know that we're all invested in having our kids back to school in person. We know that school provides not only the learning that you can get virtually, but the social interaction, the behavioral support, mental health support. There's so many positive benefits to being in person. So I believe as a nation and certainly as a state, all of us are invested in getting our kids back to school. Many things are going to depend on whether or not they need to be masked. And I think it's difficult to tell right now, but the case rates going down is great. And that is a factor. We have a lot of teachers, most of teachers who are vaccinated. That's a factor. Now kids over age 12 are getting vaccinated. That will be a factor as well. So I think we have to look at all of these different metrics to decide on whether they or not they need to wear masks, community spread, how much virus is circulating. All of those things come into making a decision. But I think as a state and as a nation, we are very, very focused on making sure our kids can be back in person.
I think that, you know, everyone wants that. But from I just want to clarify from what you're saying now is we don't know. That if cases can continue to go down and we don't see another surge, that it's more likely. But as of right now, we don't know. Is that an accurate way to describe it?
Yes, we don't know for sure. And I think the question is whether or not they'll have to be back masked. I think that it's very, very likely that kids are going to be back in person unless the cases are out of control or something like that. But I believe kids will be back in person. Whether or not they're masked is going to depend on the situation. If we have a lot of virus circulating, if we're having cases and that sort of thing. But getting kids back in person is a priority for everyone.
Mm-hmm. One final question, Dr. Johnson. We've talked about COVID the entire time. I'm sure most of your time is spent on COVID. Are there other health issues in Pennsylvania not getting attention right now because of COVID?
Well, certainly our attention has been focused on COVID. That's been our biggest health issue right now. But in terms of the health system in general, COVID has really magnified some of the issues that we have, issues with disparities in healthcare, access to healthcare. Many of those things we were aware of, but they became much more visible during COVID. So we are going to be certainly focused on making sure that every Pennsylvanian has good access to healthcare and the things that they need to make themselves and their families healthy. So that's going to be a huge priority for the state and for all of us to make sure that we shore up those gaps that we found during the COVID pandemic. Mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania's Acting Physician General, Dr. Denise Johnson. Dr. Johnson, thank you very much for being with us today.
It was my pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
For a deeper look at the changing tide of healthcare, check out WITF's Transforming Health at transforminghealth.org, a partnership of WITF, WellSpan Health, and Capital Blue Cross.
Coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk, we'll be discussing the state's climate report that is forecasting that the average temperature or temperatures could rise by like 6 degrees over the next 30 years or so. And that's coming up on tomorrow's program. Freedom is a word we've heard often over the past year, but freedom means different things to different people. Much of one's view of freedom is shaped by their life's experiences, ethnic or racial background, and history. Dickinson College's House Divided Project, which helps K through 12 classrooms learn more about the American Civil War, with special attention paid to efforts to abolish slavery. As part of the House Divided Project, Dickinson is launching a 3-week summer program for low-income high school seniors and first-generation college students from the mid-state that focuses on the historic struggle for freedom in America. Joining us to discuss this project is Dr. Matthew Pinsker, who is professor of history and Pahanka chair in American Civil War history at Dickinson College. Todd Mealy is assistant director of the program grant for this program and a teacher at Penn Manor High School in Lancaster County. And Sophronia Perry is executive director of Hope Station in Carlisle. Thank all three of you for being with us today. And if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. Dr. Pinsker, let me start with you. How would you describe this program?
Well, first of all, thanks, Scott, for having us on. The program is designed to give rising high school seniors, especially in South Central Pennsylvania, a chance to get themselves acclimated to college level work and to get a leg up on the college admissions process. We're using the study of freedom, democracy, and self-government as a vehicle for accomplishing all of that.
How did it come to be?
Well, there is this amazing foundation in New York called the Teagle Foundation. They have been funding these programs, Knowledge for Freedom seminars, across the country. It's a curriculum that started in Columbia University, but it's spread across Ivy League schools, schools around the country, Ursinus College in Pennsylvania. And now we've brought it to Dickinson College. They've funded us for 3 summers of this program. This summer is our pilot experience. And we hope that after a successful run with the Teagle funding, we'll be able to continue it, you know, indefinitely to help students across the region.
With looking at what's occurred over the past year in the U.S. and around the world, but especially here in the United States with racial reckoning and an election in 2020 that has been very controversial, the timing for this would seem to be perfect. Let me ask you, why now?
Well, you know, it's perfect in the sense that there's a lot of trouble. And people need support right now. I think the overriding problem or challenge for students right now is the pandemic has really disrupted learning. So we're actively trying to recruit the students who've been worst hit by this pandemic, low-income and first-generation college students, you know, who need some help getting a return to normalcy. But the truth is everybody needs it, and any rising high school senior can apply. We're open for applications for another 10 days. The application process closes May 31st. And we've received some amazing applicants already, but we still have some spots available. And I can tell you, I think the reason why we still have some places available is because people are just so fatigued. It's hard for people to rally themselves even to submit something simple like a basic application. This is, you know, a one-page essay and some supporting materials. But it's a challenge right now for everybody. People are tired. And so we're hoping that, you know, a show like this and some other advertising that we're doing will help generate the kind of response we need to help these students with the whole variety of free resources, including, by the way, you know, free college credit. Yeah, this is another way to get a leg up in the process for being a success in college.
Mm-hmm. Sophronia Perry, as executive director of Hope Station in Carlisle, mm-hmm. just what Dr. Pinsker was talking about, that the pandemic has created some real challenges when it comes to youth programming. Talk about those a little bit during the pandemic and how a program like this can be a big boost.
Hi, yes. So it has really been difficult for not only my organization, but a lot of the organizations, I'm sure, around the country, because we weren't able to do our programs in person. And with the children having to do their schoolwork via Zoom most of the day, it was very difficult to get them to get onto Zoom afterwards to do another program. You know, even if it was something that was fun that they enjoyed doing, it was difficult to do that. And so it has been a challenge for all of us just trying to figure out how to continue to navigate through all of this. The thing is that, you know, most of the kids that come to our programs, they enjoy coming because it is something that's in person. It is something where they get to see each other after school. They get to unwind. We have a lot of fun with the kids, and not being able to do that has been hard on all of us. I think our struggle really is going to be getting those same students to say, okay, I want to continue on. I want to, you know, go further with my college experience, because they've had such a difficult, I'd say nearly 2 years of schooling in this way with the pandemic. And it is us, you know, working together along with the school to encourage more kids to take advantage of this terrific opportunity for them. So, I mean, we really are challenged. We don't see the kids the way we did. They don't come into Hope Station because we had to close our doors to the public as well. And so it's just made it really hard. It really has. But I think that this is a great opportunity. And, you know, advertising in this way could be something to really boost it and really get parents and the kids that are interested to participate and join this.
You know, Scott, you're kind of an exception to the rule here. You're so used to working on the radio, and you've done it for so many years and done it so well, that I think it might be hard to comprehend how most students and teachers just can't adapt to the online or distance learning environment in the same way. It's always useful as a supplement, but the vast majority of people learn better and experience better in person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have heard that so much over the past year. And I think that, you know, in our previous segment, we were talking about whether students would come back to class in person in the fall. Everyone is hoping for that, and wondering about wearing masks, not wearing masks, that kind of thing. Dr. Pinsker, you had talked earlier about the Tegel Foundation. Just a little more information about this seminar. It is part of the Knowledge for Freedom program. It introduces students to a series of great texts addressing fundamental questions about freedom, democracy, and self-government. I can see where a lot of adults, many Americans, could benefit from this. The seminar includes room and board and trips to historic sites in Washington, D.C., Gettysburg, and Harrisburg. But let me ask Dr. Pinsker, when we say great texts, what are some of the great texts that we're talking about?
Well, we're going to start the first week of the seminar explaining the great contradiction that's at the heart of American history, which is how did a country born out of the Enlightenment, promising natural rights and equality for all, how did it accommodate slavery? And so we'll look at the Constitution and the Declaration and the debates around those, you know, seminal moments. We'll put American slavery into the context of world history and the history of slavery. And then the second week, we'll talk about the debate to abolish slavery in America. We're going to call this section of the course the other Lincoln Douglas debates, because it involves the debate over how to achieve change between Abraham Lincoln, a reformer and a moderate, and Frederick Douglass, not Stephen Douglass, but Frederick Douglass, the famous black abolitionist, who was more of a radical and a revolutionary. You know, and this is the great recurring and perennial tension in any reform movement in any era in American history, and we're living through it today as well, which is, how do you best achieve change? Is it working inside through the halls of power, or is it outside on the streets, or some combination? And so we hope that that will engage the students in a variety of ways and get them thinking about what they want to do in the future to make their world a better place. And then finally, we'll talk about the legacy of slavery and how it's embedded in public monuments and our memory in arts and literature, and the importance of understanding how, in some ways, it's the enslaved who've been erased from the past, and not so much the charge that current activists are trying to erase slaveholders and Confederates from the past. But we'll open that debate up and let the students decide for themselves.
Todd Mealy, as assistant director of the program grant for this, but you're a teacher at Penn Manor High School. You've written books about the history. I'm curious. I mean, you haven't been in the classroom. Maybe you have, but not as many students in the classroom over the past year. What do students in this age group, 16, 17, 18 years old, what's their concept of freedom?
Yeah. Well, Scott, thanks for having me, including me in this conversation. I think where, you know, my colleagues, I have the best of both worlds. You know, I'm with the students that we're looking for to enroll in this program every single day, teaching at Penn Manor. We're looking for rising seniors. I teach rising seniors at the moment. I've also, adjunct at Dickinson for a number of years. So I've seen, the experience that both college students now and high school students and what they've endured over the last year and a half or so. In my take, no matter what the level is that studying, freedom and liberty are conversations that students want to have. I mean, they have opinions on the matter. They have different points of view on the matter. They want their voice to be heard and valued in these kinds of discussions. And I think what this Knowledge for Freedom seminar, what it does is provide an outlet for these students to both engage in pivotal texts, engage with one another, engage in the landmarks that will be relevant to all the things we're talking about. So, they have thoughts on this, and their thoughts come from different lived experiences. And so they want to engage with one another, and they want to engage with people that are, have both feet in doing the kind of work of studying liberty and justice.
Let's face it, the pandemic has been what has dominated everyone's lives over the past year. But there also has been a lot going on. I mentioned the election of 2020, racial reckoning across the country. I'm hearing more people saying that because of the great lie having to do with the election, that there's a need for more civics education, more history education. I guess my question is, Todd, let me ask you, are students in this age group, are they more aware because of what's going on today? Are they more aware of history, more aware of civics, of their government, of, this big picture issue of freedom?
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's a lot of reasons why students are more aware. I mean, social media is one. The fact that many students have been home, virtual learning, in front of a television, seeing, news pundits debate these issues, seeing politicians debate these topics. As I mentioned before, they want to sit in a classroom and rebuild those relationships and gain access to mentors, their classroom teachers, their coaches, their performing arts instructors. They want to do those things once again, what would look like normal again. And this topic about history and civics does appear to be front and center in that engagement with all of these students, you know, no matter what their background is, because they're hearing things. And, you know, the best way that they learn is by having discussions with one another. And, you know, the classroom, you know, kind of being in person is the best place for them to work on articulating their thoughts on the matter and learning the kind of history that you're talking about, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, can I add something?
I was hoping both of you would. Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah. So I want to say that, you know, for Black children and for other children, other minority children, they have because they've experienced this. This is not new for them. You know, I think that a lot of them are starting to, I'm really pleased with our youth today because they are learning things that we had not learned in the past. I mean, we've always had conversations in our homes about it, but there were so many things that we didn't learn. And these kids are able to do that, not just through social media, but because now there's Google and there's so much information that's out there that they're able to easily access. They're learning a lot about the past, and they're able to actually teach us some things that we didn't know. So I think that a lot of it, you know, what happened over the summer, you know, was bound to happen, and they're really pushing forward, and they're making sure that people are hearing them now. And it's an important movement. It really is.
Mm-hmm. And Scott, I just wanted to chime in as well that as much as students are aware and as much as they've learned over the last year, you know, tensions and emotions are so hot that it's important to get that classroom space where people can learn some depth and understand some perspective and gain some empathy so that there is, a new approach to engaging these debates. We need to figure out a way to argue without vilifying. And that's a challenge for everybody right now. But I think that's one of the advantages to looking at arguments between Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln or between the founders at the Constitutional Convention. It teaches you some perspective and humility. And I think that's incredibly valuable right now.
You know, Dr. Penscar, I want to make sure we give the information out before we leave today on how you say you still have some spots open. But, you know, when we're talking about that awareness, now the students that you teach, obviously they are interested in civics and in history. But over the years, you've heard students say that, oh, how am I going to be affected by this? I wonder if that attitude is changing now that there are people, especially young people, who say what happened in the past affects me directly now and I can see a parallel.
Well, I'm sure you're right. I mean, that's what Sophronia was just saying, and it's what we're seeing across the country, young people stepping up, which is a great thing. But everybody, no matter how much they're aware and active, they need depth and understanding. You know, and that's why we're eager to get people to apply to this program. The applications close on May 31st. It's an application that students can apply through their schools. Our website link is at, you know, Sound Smart homepage. It's also at the House Divided Project. This seminar is free. Everything about it is free. And I think the students who are engaged in this, you know, should apply and take advantage of it if they can. It will only help deepen their understanding of the problems that have been, you know, recurring in American history.
And as I said, I think that understand why right now you're looking for low-income students, seniors, and first-generation college students. But I think that many of the things that could be learned here would benefit Americans of all ages. I want to thank our guest for being with us, Dr. Matthew Penscar, professor of history and Pahanka chair in American Civil War history at Dickinson College. Todd Mealy is a teacher at Penn Manor High School in Lancaster County, and Sophronia Perry, executive director of Hope Station in Carlisle. Thank you very much for being with us today. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.